I walk ahead of him because he's like very clearly angry, and I feel like, okay, he probably doesn't want to talk to me. So in that case, I was walking a bit fast to get out of there. So I went to get my phone and wallet from the security room, and then he's walking behind me, and then I hear something. So there's like four people in the room. At some point, the internet took over the narrative, and they wanted to make it seem like chess cheating is not non-existent, basically, and that everyone's a paranoid, crazy loser who can't handle losing. But I mean, it's just it exists. Here we go, Fabi. Welcome back. Missed you for a couple of weeks, but obviously, in the middle of the tournament, we don't get to do this very often. So, thanks for agreeing to do a quick one. This is the rest day, the second rest day, the final rest day as we enter the final three rounds at the US Chess Championships. How are you feeling, first of all, after 8 rounds in St. Louis?
I mean, overall, pretty good. Tournament is going relatively well. I mean, could be a bit better, but probably not much better. Extracted more or less the maximum I could from the games I had, and in the lead, half a point lead ahead of a Wander Liang, who's having a great tournament, doing very well. And other people are struggling to keep pace a little bit, so Wander is definitely in the running fully, but other guys, I don't know if anyone's too happy with their tournament so far. Hans is plus one. Wesley was plus one, but got that win removed. And Sam Sevian is plus one. So yeah, it's good. I'm pretty happy. Just, last three games are tough. It's the end of the tournament, a bit tiring. 8 rounds, normally like a 9 round event is normal, so 11 rounds. You can imagine that the last few games are a bit more tiring than usual.
I guess that's the big one. How are you feeling in terms of energy? Because you were mentioning even at the beginning of the tournament that this is one of the most important thing, and you've noticed that in recent tournaments, perhaps especially at the Olympiad, I think you told Anastasia that you ran out of energy. How are you
Yeah,
feeling
very,
right
very
now?
clearly. Very clearly at the Olympiad, in the last few rounds, I wasn't didn't have the energy. This led to some misses against against Richie. I think that it was a long and tough game, and also the team situation kind of plays a role where you're having these extra thoughts, extra kind of pressure in terms of I kind of don't want to lose this game and thinking about the result of it more. So, and it was a long tournament, and at the end I was playing all the games. So I didn't play the first round, but then I played 10 rounds in a row, and some of them quite tough against very strong players. So yeah, and it's a bit easier when you're 18, 19, 20
Yeah.
to basically like ignore any physical things. Like, I don't know, when I was 18, I didn't sleep before games. I was just like, okay, play some video games until 5 in the morning, wake up at 8, and prepare for the game, and then goes. No, like it was completely normal. Now I have to get like 7, 8 hours of sleep, and then still like energy reserves are less than they used to be. I'm not saying that I'm old or anything, but definitely you have to watch your energy levels a bit more. That's you take it for granted, and then at some point you realize, okay, at least I have to take more care. Not that I'm like physically dying or anything, but to concentrate, keep concentration, and not have any lapses during a game, you have to have pretty much 100% energy. And in normal life, we don't really think about it. Like, okay, I slept for 5 hours instead of 6.5 or whatever, like big deal. But normally, you don't have like this sort of thing where if you have 30 seconds lack of concentration, that it can mean you lose a game. So it's a bit specific, like any sports. I mean, any. I don't know if people will say it's not a sport, but okay. Any sort of competitive field, you kind of have to be at 100%. And chess is similar in that way. So, yeah, but I feel okay physically, feel fine. Middle of the tournament was a bit tiring with all the drama that went on. Everyone knows about that, of course. So it was a bit
Sure,
tiring, more emotionally tiring,
let's speak about that since we're on it. Obviously, we kind of touched upon it with Yasser, but
a lot of people are wanting and expecting, let's say, and hoping that you would give your take on it. Obviously, we're talking about the Christopher Yu one because you played with him before everything happened, and obviously there was the moment at the chessboard. I don't know whether you can share any thoughts about that or basically anything that you would like to address.
I don't know him personally too well. Of course, he's a very young guy, 17. I actually thought he was older, but I found out after the game that he's 17, so very, very young guy. And don't know him personally. Obviously, he's one of the biggest talents in US chess. Clearly emotional after the game. Clearly emotional. And I mean, I'll just say like what happened from my point of view. What I saw with it before hearing all the aftermath was that he was saying some things after the game where he had a very promising position, close to winning, ended up losing it. So he said something like, "How could I lose that?" And some things he said were kind of couldn't really understand what he was saying, but more or less the gist was, "Okay, like how could I lose that? It was a great position." And at first I wasn't sure if he was directing it towards me or just venting, just saying things. And I responded kind of briefly. I thought like maybe he was talking to me and we'll discuss a bit the game, even though he's agitated. Anyway, we'll discuss it with him. So I said something like, "Yeah, of course he had a very, very promising position, and at some point he must have been much better," something along those lines, very generic. After that, he didn't really say anything else. We just kind of got up. There was an interaction with the arbiter, Chris Bird, because he didn't sign one of the score sheets. Okay. So Chris said that you have to sign the score sheets to finalize the result. Basic protocol. Then he kind of angrily separated the score sheet, the carbon copy from the original. And I mean, obviously very angry, but no big deal. Then I walk a bit ahead of him to go out of the play hall. Like there's a security room outside the play hall, so we have to go through that to take the stairs downstairs to leave the building. I walk ahead of him because he's like very clearly angry, and I feel like okay, he probably doesn't want to talk to me. So in that case, I was walking a bit fast to get out of there. So I went to get my phone and wallet from the security room, and then he's walking behind me, and then I hear something. So there's like four people in the room. I won't say any names, but it's just people working in the tournament. Well, two of us, sorry, five people in the room, two of us, and then three people working in the tournament in various capacities. And so I leave, I will go to get my phone wallet. I'm like facing the opposite direction. And then I hear something like, more or less, "Christopher, you can't do that." Something along those lines. And first, I thought more or less he maybe threw something around. That was my first instinct. Like he threw something, maybe he damaged something, hit the wall. I mean, obviously there's a lot of harmless ways to take your anger out, which maybe aren't too appropriate, but still kind of harmless, you know. Like tennis players, they smash their rackets, take their aggression out on some inanimate object, and maybe even get a penalty, right, for racket abuse or whatever. Although, like more or less a few seconds later, it became clear that he actually struck or in some way did something to this woman who was working there. And then, so she said, like he hit me. She seemed physically fine, but more or less like he punched me and punched me in the back, I think is what, So. Anyway, I actually didn't see what happened. I didn't see the video after. Of course, there's security cameras, and so there's some video footage of it. But from what I understand, my understanding, he kind of lashed out in a violent way, and assaulted someone.
Yeah, no, very, very unfortunate situation. We sort of talked about it also with Yasser the second day after it happened, and it's unfortunate for everybody involved. Of course, our first thoughts go to the videographer because at least my first thoughts. I don't want to speak for you, but this was my first concern.
Well,
Like, is
of
she
course,
okay?
I thankfully, I physically, I think she's doing fine, and mentally, I think she's doing okay. Of course, it's like very random act of violence. Like, there's no excuse for it. Just done out of anger and with no particular reason at all. Not that there could be a reason, but yeah, it's very, very unfortunate. But I believe that she's doing okay, which is good news. And yeah, it was kind of just very, very surprising. But okay, I think that the aftermath, everything that was handled in the best possible way by everyone, and I think everything is more or less like clear at this point. So he of course he can't continue the tournament, and generally speaking, he needs to find a way to deal with these things so he's not violent and can manage his anger, which of course isn't difficult to manage, but yeah, you can never do things like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And his family came out with a statement. I've addressed it in the previous video as well. You guys can read it if you want. I think it was a well-written apology statement. Obviously, not pretty much taking the blame and not trying to find any excuse. And I think that's kind of an important thing to do as you try to rehabilitate yourself and your image into the chess world. We're expecting. And I think it was addressed in that one that Christopher himself will be coming out with a statement also later. But obviously right now he's dealing with other things. But yeah, no, very unfortunate. And of course this impacts the tournament also quite heavily because this happened in round five, one round later if it would have happened, and all his previous results would have stayed. As it happened before the midpoint of the tournament, all of his results were annulled, which impacted you as well, quite directly because you did win against him. How did you react to that? Obviously, this is within the FIDE rules, so there's not much you can do. But how do you see that rule? And is there a way that things can be better in that regard, or that rule can be improved in any way?
No, I think that the rule, like, there's no good solution to someone leaving the tournament. Usually it's just for some generic reason, health reason, very often. We had it with Duda in Sinkfield Cup, some health issue, he couldn't continue. We had it with Ding in 2018. He broke a bone, couldn't
That was in
continue.
Norway.
Yeah, sometimes it doesn't impact the tournament so much because it's like they made some draws. Decisive results, of course, impacts the tournament. There's nothing you can do about it. I think. Of course, it's not good that the tournament is impacted in any way, like extraneous circumstances that change the results. Obviously, not the best, but there was no choice. Like he had to leave the tournament. I don't think that the rule should be changed because I don't really see any solution which is good for all parties. When I say all parties, I mean like that's fair to all the tournament players in the tournament.
Players that
I
have
mean, if
played
you,
with the person leaving, players that have not yet
yeah,
played, etc.,
like
etc.
if you annul all the results, of course it looks like it's kind of unfair to me and Wesley, right? The players who beat him. But if you forfeit him the rest of the games, then it's unfair to the players who drew him because the players who were going to play him might not have beaten him. Probably, well, certainly not all of them would. So that would also not be fair. If you, yeah, I don't really know what other options there are, so that's just how it is. And any solution would be kind of unfair if you want to frame it that way to one of the players or another.
Damaging to
Well,
somebody, yeah.
the only way it wouldn't affect is if he had drawn all his games and then they just annul his draws and it's no big deal.
Yeah. What else has happened in the chess world since we last spoke? Obviously, the Spanish team championship scandal, including
There's a lot
Kirill
happened. A
Shevchenko.
lot happened.
A lot of things happened in the span of like 3 days, I think. That happened, and the Christopher situation happened. You don't get a chance to discuss that too much, but I don't know if there's anything you
No,
want
I mean, again,
to add to
it's one of those
that.
situations. I can't
Of
comment
course,
on too
of
much because
course.
I don't know. I only read what everyone read.
Yeah, there's not
Yeah,
much
prepared with
information.
some interest, of course. I mean, it's over the board potential cheating scandal.
Yeah.
Bizarre story.
Very bizarre.
It's like I'm open always to the possibility that people are ready to cheat because I think that human nature, there are incentives and people get tempted. Even people who they just seem like totally normal people, like fair and this and that. And you wouldn't think that they would. But then it's, people hate losing. It's pure human nature. Hate to lose, want success, want money, want fame, and want the easy way. And sometimes they try the hard way, and it's just very difficult and even impossible for some people to get what they want. And so cheating presents itself as a. So I'm totally open to that. And especially when, let's say, some kind of convoluted cheating scandal is unveiled. For example, the Feller case in 2010.
The Olympia fellow
They had
case,
a
yeah.
system, multiple people texting, sign language, and complex system to enable a player to cheat.
Basically,
And this one is
police
just,
was involved in that one. It was
well, of
extremely,
course,
extremely
it is
well
also
done.
fraud if you think about it.
It is,
In
it
general,
is.
cheating, stealing, it's fraud, it's match fixing, it's a lot of things which are criminal. So it's serious. But this one was just so bizarre. It's like I didn't even understand when I read that there is a phone in the bathroom and it has a note on it. And all I'm thinking is, first of all,
That's
who
absolutely
leaves their
ridiculous.
phone in a bathroom with a note? You can
Absolutely
forget.
ridiculous.
And also, who is answering their phone in a public bathroom at night? I don't know. I've never done that. Maybe it's a thing, but it's not a thing that I've heard of.
So
And
I might be completely wrong on that, but my understanding was that there was an initial phone that was left and taken by the cleaning person, and then the second phone with a note, basically, don't take the phone. I need to use it at night.
yeah, so if there's a phone in any bathroom, I'm probably gonna like take it to the lost and found. If there's a phone in a bathroom at a chest tournament, I'm probably taking it to the arbor. But if there's a phone with a note on it, I don't know what am I gonna do with this? There are no. I'm definitely not leaving it there. I'm giving it to someone.
It's very strange. It's so
It's really
strange.
weird.
Yeah.
So the story is just bizarre. Now I'm not gonna say that he was caught or anything because I don't think anything's been concluded.
There's a
It's
pending
just really,
investigation,
it's
yes.
really suspicious. Really, really. I'm assuming that the accounts of his behavior, like only going to that particular bathroom and the pan, I'm assuming all those things are valid. If those things are valid, that is very suspicious. If not, I don't know. It's just a bizarre story. I don't see why people would frame him, but again, I'm not going to comment too much on whether or not he actually did cheat, because if he did in this manner, it is probably the dumbest thing that any chess player has done cheating wise to get caught. Like, probably the dumbest. I don't think that you can concoct a dumber system, especially when there are so many easy systems. You know what would even be, it's still dumb, but at least you wouldn't get caught so red-handed, assuming that this is actually the case. Would be to just have a phone with no note, like just a burner phone. I mean, it would be found, but you can't really connect a burner phone to a person. But with a note, just makes and also a burner phone could just have been forgotten there, right? Just like I lost my phone. That okay. This explanation, at least, I can imagine someone losing their phone in the bathroom, not putting a note on their phone, answering it at midnight.
I honestly cannot wait for, the investigation to kind of bring more things to light. I'm also curious, where do you leave a phone in the bathroom? Like, do you hide it in the bowl, in the water bowl? Like, where do you
No, but then the note doesn't make sense. Oh, excuse me, I'm just hiding my phone in the water tank,
where do
in
you
the
put it?
toilet tank
Where do you put
with a
it?
note. I assume it was like on the ground. I don't know.
Yeah,
Or maybe there's
definitely.
like a ledge. Very often there's a ledge, right, in a stall. So on the ledge.
Look, I've seen mafia movies also where you hide the pistol in the toilet bowl.
Godfather. Yes.
Yes, the Godfather, the famous Godfather scene. But I've never seen it with a phone, and I could never imagine it with a phone. But of course, I mean, this has happened before. It's not like a novel thing. This has happened with
No, of
Rouses.
course, of
This has
course. Yeah.
happened with Nicolosi or whatever his name was,
Nicolidze.
Nigalidze, the Georgian Grandmaster in, I believe,
Not
Abu
anymore.
Dhabi
Not a
or
grandmaster.
Dubai. Yeah, his Grandmaster title got taken away. Yeah, no, not a great situation.
Now, of course,
It's another big scandal
it's the
with
classic
Moscow, I
trope
guess.
of a really dumb cheater is phone in the bathroom. That is the this is like the lowest level of cheating. The highest level would be I guess
What fella?
invisible earpiece or like some technological. I mean, there have been alleged instances of people with wires attached to their leg and okay, some sort of Morse code. I mean, these things are, at least you can respect the hustle of it. There was the Bulgarian guy, what's his name? Ivanov? What was his
Ivanov.
first?
Ivanov.
Yeah, what
Bo
was his
Bo
first? Anyway,
Borislav Ivanov or something like
yeah,
that.
Borislav Ivanov. Okay, he had like maybe something in his shoe.
I
I
still don't
can't
know
remember that.
if we understood exactly how he did it.
But he had some. He had something. He wasn't caught red-handed. Like again, we respect the hustle. He eventually got arrested for some other crime, not just related. I mean, hey, he's a committed scammer. I mean, it's you can't even blame him. Like he's just doing what he's meant to do. He's
He's hustling.
scamming chess. He's scamming other things. Okay, but yeah, it doesn't make also. I mean, Shevchenko is a very strong grandmaster, and he's playing a league game. Inconsequential for him. He's the guy who legitimately did reach, to the best of my knowledge, a nearly 2,700 rating, which would put him probably he was like top 40, if not higher. So he's a legitimately strong grandmaster playing a league game where probably money is paid for participation, not for results. Sometimes there is some t system where you get more money based on
If
your
you
result
win,
or get.
the title or if you get some trophy, then you get more money. But it's usually appearance based.
Yeah, but usually like it would be the most pointless place to cheat because best case again you're getting a few rating points. Worst case your career is over. But okay, again I don't know. The cheating stuff is of course this it's like full blown. I can tell our viewers based on like just inside knowledge of what chess players talk about. Basically, there are no strong chess players who don't believe cheating is a big problem. Like, there's just ch chess players who believe it's either a bigger or a smaller problem, and then chess players who talk about it more or less publicly. Obviously, the most public is Kramnik, and the least public would be, well, a lot of people don't want to talk about it, right? But if people think that it's paranoia entirely, it's not, because not everyone can be paranoid. There are definitely levels in which it goes into paranoia, and then there's a level which is probably reasonable. But that it's an issue. It's like, okay, this is so clear. The only thing is that at some point the internet took over the narrative, and they wanted to make it seem like chess cheating is not non-existent, basically, and that everyone's a paranoid, crazy loser who can't handle losing. But I mean, it exists. So I think that like maybe Vidit said something, which is like he's
Recently,
generally
yeah, he said
a guy who
that.
doesn't say much about these things. Like he's staying away from the drama, very fair. But he said something about how cheating is potentially an issue.
Over the
It
board.
should
He
already
was talking
be.
about over the board cheating.
Yeah. Well, I think both over the board and online. Online is not an issue anymore. It's a part of online
Well,
chess.
online people kind of already accepted the fact that it's very prevalent.
But they didn't. That's the thing. When I said it was very prevalent, everyone was like, no, you're paranoid.
I
And
think you said like 50%, and people were like, okay, that's too high, basically.
I don't know.
Like,
I don't know at
whatever
all.
it's acceptable to them, to each individual, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, people can say what they want. Of course, I don't know the exact number, but to imagine that at some point, like half of players online have
Yeah, that's
Of
crazy.
like strong players online have dabbled in cheating. Totally believable to my mind.
Cool.
Completely believable. But I said I won't talk too much about it. I mean, I'm not going to. I like with online chess again. I think that is a serious issue, which I don't think too much about anymore because I've accepted. Like I play Tile Tuesday. I know that I play a few cheaters every now and then. I don't care too much. Sometimes you also beat them. Feels pretty good. Like you can kind of tell when someone's cheating, and also when you're able to beat them, which might be people will also say, okay, you're crazy and so on. But again, you it is definitely a part. It would also be crazy that it's not, if you think about it. Because again, it's just a part of human nature to want to get ahead, to want to make money, and to want to win in a competitive atmosphere. And cheating has been a part of pretty much every sport. And protections have been had to been put in place. So are you telling me that there are two possibilities? Either chess players are special and just higher than others, morally more superior. Not the case, I can pretty much guarantee. Or the measures are so sophisticated that chess players cannot get past them. These are the only two possibilities besides that cheating exists in
Well, the
a
second one is
very.
definitely not true, and the first one is also definitely not true.
I mean, the first one
So
is definitely not true. The second one,
I would say the
at
US
least,
Championships
probably.
has very good fair play measures.
Oh, sure. Like over the board tournaments, I believe that with good measures, you can definitely nearly eliminate the possibility.
But there's very, very
Without
few
measures,
tournaments that do that. Like I would say everything that
great.
happens in St. Louis has that layer of protection. Not because you have two types of scanners, we're not going to get into the details, but the scanning is very thorough, but also because of the delay. I think delay is a crucial part of it.
Or first,
Like
no, I
and
think like
usually you have like 5 minute delay or like 10 minute delay. I think you need more. What we're doing in St. Louis with 30 minute delay, I think it's probably best.
yeah, well, for rapid and blitz you can get away with 5 to 10 minutes. For blitz you can get away with basically any delay, right? For classical, I think 30 minutes should be the minimum. And unfortunately for the vast majority of tournaments, these measures are just not realistic because they are small money events. And although I don't play many open tournaments, I'm pretty sure that open tournaments are the main breeding ground for cheating, and especially American Opens. I've heard things, and between that and the lack of measures and the amount of suspicion that I've heard from people who regularly play those tournaments, it just seems like it's very likely that some cheating exists. And also because the money is pretty significant very often, and even can be, we've talked about this before, in those category prizes can also be very significant. So like people who are 1500 can get like, $5,000 prize for an amateur chess player. It's such a significant amount of money. You can't make money in a competitive sport where you're an amateur so easily, right? So again, these are things which, even though they don't affect me, I still want to mention that cheating is cheating. Like it personally, I might not notice it because it's not in my chess kind of atmosphere, right? But definitely, like in open tournaments and leagues and so on, there is the possibility and definitely an incentive. And with those two factors, yeah, you should probably have some cheating. I mean, it just exists. Now, you can also see just like over the years, how many accounts on like chess.com have been closed of very strong players. And I can guarantee you that they haven't caught all of them. It's just not possible that they've caught every single one. They might have a pretty good algorithm to catch cheaters, but they couldn't have caught all of them. But even the amount they've caught is an extraordinary number of strong players who have been willing to and also been caught.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the solution is. That's the hard part.
Cool.
But
Fabi, I don't want to hold you for too long. You have better things to do right now. Get ready for tomorrow's match against a Wander. Finally, I want to ask you about one of the stories of the tournaments, and that is Carissa's incredible performance. 8 out of 8 so far. Obviously, she's still in contention at this stage in the event to get the $64,000 bonus, the Bobby Fischer prize, which, to my understanding, would have not been possible if you would have asked me, I don't know, any time in the last many, many years since its inception, basically. I would have said, yeah, that's never going to happen again. What's your take on her performance, and what do you rate her chances to top it off and finish 11 out of 11?
Yeah, it's an extraordinary result. I think it's great. I'm very happy for her. She's had a really good run recently, Olympiad and this, and she has a chance to make it historical. So the second time in history that a player has gone perfect in a US champion, in a national championship. I don't know, maybe some other national championship has happened, but the US championship is a very strong national championship. And she's 8 out of 8. She has 3 more games. I know that the models and all the numbers and all the ratings will say like she has 10%. I'm pretty sure to win 3 out of 3. I think it's at least 40%. I think momentum is part of it. She's gotten into the heads of her opponents very psychologically. Clearly, she's exerting some level of pressure on them that they can't handle. And I hope. I don't like want to show favoritism towards players, but I do hope she makes it just because it's his historical moment, so it probably will not be repeated again.
It's one of the big stories of the event. I think Jennifer, you got very close to it in terms of final score. She got 10 out of 11 in recent times, I think 2019. But she was already out of contention, I believe, by round 7. She made a draw or something along those lines. So we knew
Look,
that
it's
it's not going to happen.
I mean, clearly some big results are possible. Like 10.5, 10, these are amazing scores, but there is something different about winning all your games. And yeah, Fischer did it. I think that in the open section, it will never happen. Just never. It's impossible. I just can't see it ever happening.
All of you were out of contention after round one.
And in the women's, will it happen again ever? If it happens now. It's a very small chance. Like a lot of things have to go together, but she's now like within the top. Well, let me check to make sure I'm not saying anything wrong, but I think within the top 30 in the world among women.
Especially after the results in this
20,
competition.
27, 27 in the world. If she wins 3 games, she will go to around 23rd to 24th place, somewhere around there. Which puts her with like some of the best players of the last few decades, like Elizabeth Petz, Marie Sabag, Mary Arvidsson, and close to a number of players who have played in the Candidates tournament. So, like, what I would really like to see is that she keeps improving and potentially, I mean, it's okay. These days it might seem still like a long shot, but potentially fights for candidates and World Championship qualification. I would like to see that. I think it would be exciting. So,
No, I think
yeah, I think it's good. I like that she's playing so well, and I hope it continues for her.
no, and alongside Alice Lee, I would say these two are the biggest prospects of US chess at the moment, US women's chess at the moment. So obviously we want them to succeed. Cool, Fabi, I'll let you go. Thanks once again for doing this. Good luck in the last three, and I'm sure we'll catch up once again after the end of the tournament. Go get it done, and I'll see you tomorrow in St. Louis.
All right, see you.
Cheers.